Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, emotion worker, and journal keeper. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects that we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Good afternoon, Elizabeth.
Brian, are you trying to shame me?
No.
Sorry, not journal keeper. I was tempted today to bring a stack of my journals that I started keeping when I was like 13 years old.
Uh-huh.
And I just ran out of time. Someday I'll bring them. Next time we do a journal afternoon,
uh-huh,
I'll bring them and read some excerpts from my early journals. I'm sure that will be stellar radio.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Because I think not much changed in my journal from 13 to about 33.
Uh-huh.
You know, it was always about my, you know, boyfriends. And then my husband,
mm-hmm,
and then, you know, how disgruntled I was about having time to, you know, take care of myself. And it's like the same themes over and over and over again. But I have kept up with them. How about you?
I had a diary when I was about 10 that I did like 4 nights worth of writing in. That's about it.
Did you start off Dear Diary?
I think I did.
I love that.
Yeah, I think I did.
And that's the thing. I both my girls have kept journals since they were young. And I'm really happy because I was able to convince them. Somehow I got into their forward-thinking brain when they were young. Mm-hmm. I kept saying, believe me, you will love having these when you're my age. Trust me. You may get a little bored or wonder why, but you will love this. And so they've kept up with it all these years. And I made a promise to both of them that I would never look at either of their journals. You know, mm-hmm, I would never open them. And I've kept that promise. I really think everyone needs to have a private space in their life, right? Everyone needs a private space. But not to say that I'm not dying to look inside and read what they've written, but I have not, and I would always honor that space.
Mm-hmm.
But I am excited they've kept up because they'll either be horrified like I am when I go back and read my old journals, or they're going to be excited to, you know, remember, oh, that happened. And
mm-hmm,
so I wish that everyone, you know, could have that forward enough thinking to realize, one, how fast life goes, that you think, oh, you know, who's 50 years old, I'll be dead by then. But then to realize how fast life goes from 20 to 50, and then to be able to look back and think, oh my gosh, so much has happened. Because I bet you look back on even the last 10 years and it feels like, oh, 10 years went by. But if you saw yourself 10 years ago and yourself today, you'd be blown away by how much you've grown and changed.
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, look at you're a husband and a father and,
yeah,
you know, a working human and a musician. I mean, 10 years ago, if someone had said, hey, how's that fatherhood going to be 10 years from now? You would have laughed.
Yeah.
So if you had a journal to kind of track that development of Brian over the years, it would have been fruitful.
I think so. I think you're right.
Well, see, I've got you. So today we're going to talk about journaling and the power of journaling, creative journaling, all the different ways. Because, you know, the thing that's interesting, of all of the therapeutic devices we have, all the therapeutic tools that we have, journaling is one of the few that we actually have a lot of research that backs up how powerful it is, how much it actually helps people in processing feelings, moods, emotions, loss, grief, happiness, you know, to be able to log this and write about it. It moves the emotions through the body. And by moving and removing, you know, emotions through the body, it helps make space for new moods and emotions. And when we don't allow the moods and emotions to process through the body and we hold them in, hold them down, that's when we see anxiety, depression, headaches, backaches, stomach aches. I mean, it's all there. And in the work of James Pennebaker, he's at University of Texas, you know, he's been the pioneer in researching how effective it is. So if you are someone struggling with depression or anxiety or, you know, chronic illness of some kind, and you knew that this research had been done to prove that you can heal and work through these things, you would think you would jump on that, right? I mean, you'd think that you would be all over, bring it to me. I will journal my heart out. And it's also non-invasive. It's not a med, so it doesn't have side effects. I mean, we're lining up for you all of these ways that you can make any part of your life better by taking on the discipline of journaling. And it's just like taking on the discipline of nutrition or the discipline of exercising, right? We all have found things in our life that we've been able to take on a discipline of. Maybe it's meditating, yoga. So journaling is just another way of disciplining our lives in a healing way. So how many people actually stick with a journaling program?
My wife does.
Okay, good.
That's one.
So
that
in
I
your
know.
House, it's one and two.
Right, exactly.
So yeah, less than 50% of okay. people who start journaling actually are successful in carrying on. And so what's interesting is that last Friday, I headed a workshop, and it was the first time I've ever done something like this. It was an 8-hour workshop for 80 parent educators and licensed marriage and family therapists, and it was through the Center for Family Strengthening. And when I said I would do this back in October, I thought, oh, yeah, I can do a workshop for 8 hours. No problem. And then when it got to the Thursday night before the workshop, and I was up till 4:30 in the morning putting this together and putting the PowerPoint together. Because once I got into it, of course, I couldn't stop. And I kept looking for different pictures and more info. So I finished putting the workshop together at 4:30 in the morning, got up at 6:30, got to the presentation spot. And I'm very pleased by how the day went. It really went well. And the thing that was nice is because I had just put it together, it was also fresh.
Right.
I was able to talk the whole day without notes, which that was exciting. But the thing that was not depressing, but expected, but surprising, is that I introduced journaling. The theme of this workshop, I should have told you, was helping families to thrive in an anxious world, focusing on how to work with anxious teens. And my whole take on it, and we're going to do a show about this because anxiety never gets old, right? That's something we can talk about every week. But kind of the theme of this is that, you know, instead of diagnosing or labeling teens as with anxiety, why don't we take a step back and look at the world in which they operate and recognize that any normal human would be anxious given all that they're having to deal with? So that was kind of the theme of the workshop. And so part of it, I introduced journaling to work not just with the teens, but with the families to help them process it. And so for the whole day on these tables, right, so there's 12 tables with people sitting around it. And thanks to my wonderful family, we had watercolor pencils on all the tables. Thank you, General Pencil. And we had, you know, watercolor paper and some pens. And at the beginning of the day, I said, so instead of taking notes, you know, the traditional taking notes, which you're welcome to, I encourage you to use the materials to just kind of draw or doodle or express what you're feeling throughout the day and just let it flow. And then I'd stop and I had reflection prompts that came up and for people to write. And it was interesting throughout the day as I walked around and looked, because I of course wanted to see what people are doing. So many people just couldn't get themselves to like doodle anything. You know, the pencils were there and they'd pick them up and play with it and then they'd put it down and, you know, write a little bit and then push it down. It's as if people are locked up in their own fears about expressing themselves or uncertainty or critical judgment. You know, and this is a room of educators and therapists. Mm-hmm. This, you would imagine, would be the people who are open and excited about new ideas, but they were locked down in many ways, unable to allow themselves to be expressive and look at their feelings and explore their feelings. And so near the end of the day, I said, so if our main job is to help others to process their feelings and emotions, and we are feeling locked down and unable to express and explore our own feelings and emotions, I'm curious how then we translate ourselves into any sort of guide or mentor for others, because we cannot lead others any further than we've gone. And then all of a sudden, pencils started getting picked up, right? And writing started to happen. We started to move a little bit. But that was one of my takeaways from this whole experience was we have to be better at selling journaling, I think, as clinicians. We have to be better at explaining it or helping people feel comfortable with it. You know, just throwing the pencils and the paper out, if you're in a room full of children, they're going to gravitate to it and go crazy, right? Yeah. Look at Kieran. Yep. There's probably not a surface he hasn't wanted to color on.
Exactly.
But you get to a certain age and you've had enough experiences where people said, oh, you're not a very good artist, or what was that you're trying to draw? And you get locked up. So then you hit your adult years and you start identifying yourself, I'm not artistic. I'm not creative. I don't write. And so every time you throw that up, you move yourself further away from the ability to do this journaling work. So I thought, okay, we need to do a show, not just saying go journal because it's good for you. We need to do a show about journaling. Mm-hmm. How do we unlock the anxiety or fear or judgment we have about expressing ourselves? And how do we do this actual journaling process? How do we develop a habit with it, a practice of journaling, so that it actually becomes effective? And then we can model that right, habit, that practice for our children or our students. Because once we're doing something, that modeling is far more powerful, as I'm sure you know as a father, modeling is far more powerful than telling someone what to do.
Well, I'm learning.
You're learning that yeah. skill. So today I've invited a guest into the studio who is an expert in the world of creative journaling. She is actually a pioneer in the expressive arts therapy movement. And she's going to share with us today her wisdom, not only about journaling and how to introduce it, but some of the profound results she's had in research they've done introducing journaling into the school systems and how it's helped address anxiety in students. And just as a side note, you know, 90% of the students that are out on homestay who miss school on a regular basis, 90% of them are out because of anxiety. Mm-hmm. And they're out on anxiety not because it's an illness that's going to kill them, but because their parents have determined my child's too anxious for school. And how then will we ever get them into life if they've spent their childhood at home feeling anxious? So this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We get together every week, Tuesdays at 2, to talk about those things in our life that are either challenging us or causing us discomfort or causing us great joy and happiness. You're going to be invited to be part of this conversation. 805-781-3875 is our number. You can also find us on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can podcast our shows if you go to iTunes. And make sure you put in a conversation with a reluctant therapist and look for the KCBX logo on that page, because apparently two reluctant therapists pop up. So you want a conversation with a reluctant therapist and check the KCBX. Download that or subscribe to it, and you can get the shows put into your device every week and keep up with what's happening. You can reach me, Elizabeth, at thereluctanttherapist.com and check out our website. And you can always listen to previous shows at our wonderful kcbx.org website. So, Lucia Capocchioni, thank you for being patient and letting me introduce everything today. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here again.
So Lucia has been a guest once before. I think the first time I just wanted to talk about your fabulous, wonderful life, and I think we spent most of the hour talking about it. But today we're gonna talk about your specialty in journaling as our focus, but I don't want to get into that part until you do share a bit of your life and your journey to getting to where you are today as a PhD, an arts therapist, a pioneer in the expressive arts therapy movement. You just celebrated the 35th anniversary of your original book, The Creative Journal. You have had a storied career in the expressive arts. But you started well before that with other careers. So tell us a little bit about that.
Well, my first career was in art. I graduated from Immaculate Heart College, and I studied with a famous graphic designer, Sister Mary Carita, who later became known as Carita Kent. Her work is enjoying a wonderful renaissance of interest, and her shows are traveling all over the world again.
And where was this?
Immaculate Heart College was in Hollywood.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And my father was in the movie industry. He was a film editor, and he did Judy Garland and Fred Astaire and Gene Kelly films. So I grew up in an environment where there was a tremendous amount of creativity and talent floating around. So I was very blessed in that regard. I became an art major, although I studied art throughout high school at Otis Art Institute. They had Saturday classes, and that kind of kept me going because I hated school.
Okay.
I'll be real honest about it. I did not get good grades, and I hated school. From first grade to 12th, I was a pretty unhappy camper. But the arts kept me going, and so I took art lessons on Saturdays and then went to Immaculate Heart, got a degree. And before I graduated, I started working for Charles Eames, a very famous furniture designer. Anybody who's been in an airport has probably sat in his chairs.
Is that the, like, one piece
black Naga hide? Yes. With the chrome side members. And he, you know, designed the famous lounge chair. And he was also a filmmaker. He was he designed a lot of things. He was a very brilliant man and a very creative place to work. So I worked there for a couple of years, and I got married and started having kids. And when I had children, I started moving in a very different direction, and that was education. I started reading Maria Montessori's work, and I was so impressed with her philosophy and her actual method and her discoveries that children have a voice inside that leads them in the right direction if we would give them the right environment. And so I started reading her books. This is like early 60s, and she hadn't been, you know, known really in this country yet. So as soon as my children were old enough, we enrolled them in a Montessori school, and I took the Montessori training. It was 1965 while I was in training, and the Watts riots broke out in August of that year, that summer. And I was in the middle of my Montessori training and got invited to be the director of the Head Start program for the Catholic Archdiocese under federal funding.
And was the Head Start, was this the beginning of the Head Start?
I was one of the first Head Start directors in the United States.
Wow.
Yeah. And they were desperate because the whole inner city had been blown up. It was a war zone. And they needed to bring something into that setting very immediately. It was part of the War on Poverty, Johnson administration. And so I, you know, kicking and screaming and saying I'm not qualified yet, took the job and learned everything I know about education, therapy, children, PTSD, design, you name it. Yeah, that was really my school. And after that, I had an opportunity to design preschool toys for Mattel. I also did a lot of consulting all over the country for Head Start programs, including Bedford-Stuyvesant in New York and the Middle West and all over the West Coast. And it was quite an intense time. I learned a great deal. I went through a divorce in 1970-71. And about 2 or 3 years after that, I started getting very ill. I had had mononucleosis during the divorce procedure, and it sort of went away, but I started feeling much sicker, and they said, well, it's not mono. We don't know what it is. I went to doctors, and they gave me the medication. Well, actually, they started with the wrong medication, antibiotics for a virus, and that doesn't work. And I started having all the side effects. So every time I'd have a side effect, they'd send me to a specialist, so sort of like a department store. And then they'd give me more medication, then I'd have another side effect, and that would affect another part of my body. And I'd get another specialist and another set of medication. And the straw that broke the camel's back was a phone call from the HMO and from the pharmacy saying, you know, that medicine we gave you today, don't take it because we got your prescription mixed up with someone else's. Well, Elizabeth, I got so furious when I got that call. That was it. I went into the bathroom and I took all the medicines out of the chest. I took the tops off of all of them and I threw them all in the trash and went back to bed where I had been spending most of my time because I was so ill. And I asked myself a really important question. What makes me feel good? During this whole time that I've been ill, has anything given me any comfort at all? And the answer was, yes, this sketchbook that you've just recently been turning into a, what looks like a diary or journal or something like that, when you do that, you feel better. When you draw in there and when you write in there, you feel better. And so I just put two and two together and decided I was going to do what felt good and I was going to stop doing what didn't feel good. And I stopped going to doctors altogether and I just stayed home and stayed in bed because I was that sick. And drew and wrote in my journal. I drew my dreams out. I was having very intense dreams. I would draw them out. I would write about them. I would write about my feelings. It was just all drawing and writing, drawing and writing. And then I went into some therapy with a therapist who did a combination of Neo-Reichian work, very body-based, and also Gestalt therapy, which was very creative for me. And some transactional analysis. And I shared my journals with her, and she said, wow, this is great stuff. You need to keep doing this. I said, well, you don't need to tell me that. I know I need to do this. And the combination of all of that, and I would say it was primarily the journal, because I had already started feeling a little better before I went into therapy, got me through that illness. I found out many years later that it was in the family of lupus. I was diagnosed by a master of Chinese medicine and Chinese diagnosis, and he said I had a disease similar to lupus, and he described it as coming unglued. He said it affects the collagen of your system, which is the glue that holds everything together. Interestingly enough, a lot of imagery in my journal was about earth falling apart, people coming apart at the seams, literally coming apart at the joints, and, you know, just really strange images. And I was very freaked out by them when I saw them. But I knew they had meaning, and I just let them come out. And when he described the nature of that disease, I could say categorically that my imagery was an illustration of what was going on in my body.
Yeah, your body was actually trying to tell you what was happening. Incredible.
Right.
If you're just tuning in, this is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Lucia Capicchione. Dr. Capicchione is a pioneer in the expressive arts world, and she's here today to talk about not just her journey through illness and with journaling, but how we can actually start to develop a practice of journaling and why that's so important, especially so we can model it for children. Our number is 805-781-3875. If you have a question for Dr. Capicchione or a comment you'd like to make, we'd love to hear from you. The phone lines are open. So you had such success with this healing. You already had an artist background. So a lot of people, I think, are going to say, well, that's what artists do. Mm-hmm. But what led you to go on and create the creative journal for others? And when you do arts therapy, how did you convince people who weren't artists by trade that this would also work for them?
Well, first of all, artists have a disadvantage because they're used to making art that looks good. Art therapy cares nothing about that.
Okay.
And my method is really based on art therapy principles. Before I ever knew what art therapy was.
So being an artist has nothing to do with arts therapy.
No, it is a disadvantage because artists are used to making things that look good, and they're concerned with the finished product. Mm-hmm. And that's the opposite of what we're doing in art therapy and in creative journaling. We want the unconscious to come out on the page. We want feelings to come out. Things that have not had a voice in our inner life get a voice on the page. And there's no editing. There's no performance. It's just raw stuff out on the page.
So when you talked about the images that were coming up for you while you were laying in bed, how did you see those images? Were they dreams, or, you know, how did you feel?
I would just put my hand on the page with a pen, and they would start coming out. Mm-hmm. Pictures of people falling on earthquakes, and the earth is shattering, and falling into a fetal position. That image alone, which I have in my book, 35th Anniversary Edition of the Creative Journal, really turned my life around. Because when I saw that image, I said, wait a minute, this character is falling, but it's falling into a fetal position. That means something. I don't know what it means exactly, but maybe this is telling me, maybe this whole illness, maybe all this journaling is telling me that I'm going through some kind of death and rebirth, because that's what this picture is all about. And it was very, very crude. It was not artistically aesthetic or pleasing at all.
That's, I'm glad you said it, because I'm trying to imagine in my head my own images of that and what it would look like. It would probably be a circle with sticks coming off of it on ground. I mean, that'd be about the extent.
Well, that figure of mine looked like a Gumby figure. It was an outline. It was very shaky. It looked like somebody was drawing it while riding in a bus or something. It was very shaky. And then it fell into this little fetal position, but it was very, very awkward looking. It looked like maybe a young child drew it.
So when we're talking images, we're talking strictly just a crude replica of what our mind is, or unconscious is, expressing.
Right, right, exactly.
So what then inspired the Creative Journal, the original 35 years ago, need to share this?
Well, when I
And when did you get your PhD?
Well, I got my master's degree in art therapy through Goddard College in Plainfield, Vermont. And that was an independent study program in Los Angeles. So I did all my work in Los Angeles. In 1975, I had that degree. And in January of 76, I opened my private practice. My master's advisor was so excited about my journaling, because I shared some of my journal with him, and he said, this is brilliant stuff. You're really on to something. He had a way of finding talent that I've never seen. And Mel Sud was his name. And he said, you've got to publish this someday. And I started crying. I mean, I when he said that, this is very personal. This is my journal. I can't do that. Now, I had read on Ais Nin's journal, her diary, when I was sick in bed. But the idea of publishing my own, no.
Well, and that's what's interesting, because it's not that journaling hadn't existed forever.
Right.
It's just you, the way you worked with it somehow was different.
Well, that's because I was also reading Man and His Symbols about Carl Jung's work, which mm-hmm. is full of images from the unconscious and the work that he did with clients and his own work. And so the two books came really blended in my soul and came out as the creative journal method. So I decided when I started my practice that I wanted to get the word out. I had been a businesswoman. I had had a design office, and I knew about getting the word out. So I thought, you know, I'm going to go to a local organization and offer a class, and I'm going to call it the Creative Journal. So I looked around, and the YWCA in Santa Monica was very nearby. I was already teaching child development at Santa Monica College down the street. So I thought, I'm going to go over there and see if they'll offer a class. And I walked in, and the director was getting her master's degree in her marriage and family therapy license. And she looked at my proposal. She said, this is a great idea. Absolutely. Let's offer a course, 6 weeks. So she gave me a classroom, and I wrote a description. The course was filled right away. And then the next course was filled, and then we had waiting lists. So I was just packed with people. And it was no question, people loved this stuff. And in fact, those students illustrated that book. They bugged me.
The original Creative Journal.
Yeah, they bugged me. They bugged me to write the book. They said, you know, the stuff you say in here, it's not just the journal prompts, but you make some comments, and everybody's journaling is so great. Why don't you write a book? I said, well, it would only be a good book if you illustrated it. It would be boring to just read a bunch of journal prompts. What's great about this class is you're drawing and you're writing. This is really neat stuff. So they said, okay, you can, you know, we'll give you our journals and you can photocopy the artwork or whatever you want to do. Fine. Okay. But write the book. So I did in 1977. Didn't come out till 1980 because of some problems with publishers going bankrupt. And this is a long story. But anyway, the book came out in 1980, and that launched me. It was Ohio University Press, same publisher now. Swallow is the division. And I started getting invitations from school districts, from the wellness community that had just started, the first cancer support groups. There were two organizations, Wellness Community and the Center for Healing Arts. They were doing cancer support groups for patients and their families. The very first in the country, by the way, 1979. And they invited me to run journal groups there. They read my story in the book. Oh, yeah, she knows what it's like to be dying and come back. Mm-hmm. Okay, then we want her to teach this. And then I got a grant from the federal government given to me by Cal State LA in the Garvey School District to do a research project. They had seen my book, the professors at the School of Education, and they said, we've got a tricky situation. We have a four-year grant. It's an ESEA Title IIB grant in the Garvey School District, east of East LA, Hispanic and Asian immigrant children mostly. Lots of, they didn't use the term PTSD in those days, but mm-hmm. lots of trauma. Mm-hmm. Cambodian boat children, I mean, you know, really awful stuff that these kids had been through. And we had a group of artists come in and just sort of do art with them and push the teachers aside and not teach the teachers what to do. And it bombed. And the teachers hated it. And we've got to bring somebody in who really understands what to do here. So I did. I took the Creative Journal and I brought a whole team of expressive artists in. And the Creative Journal was the most popular strand of the whole program. We had creative journaling K through six in one school and K to three in another school. And so this was a pilot program, and we're going to compare these schools to the rest of the district. Well, the results were fabulous. We had as much as 20 percentile gains in reading and math in just the 1 year that we were there. And the other 2 years of funding got cut back in the Reagan administration, so we didn't get to finish it. But we had 1 year, and we got these great academic gains. But the other thing that happened was behavioral problems went out the window. Classroom management problems were not a problem anymore. The teachers were thrilled. So we saw that from a social-emotional point of view, as well as academic, we were, you know, looking really good here. So as a result of that, I wrote the book, The Creative Journal for Children, and the first chapter reports on that research in the Garvey School District in 1981-82.
If you're just tuning in, I'm so into the conversation, I forgot that we were on the air. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. Yes, this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. And you are also welcome to be part of this conversation, 805-781-3875. My guest today is Lucia Capicchione. She's had a long and successful history of incorporating creative journaling, not only into her own life and into adults' lives, but the work she's doing now in schools that started back in the 70s in the Garvey School District. We're going to jump ahead to the current work that Lucia is doing in local school districts here, working up in Cambria and trying to get more localized on the Central Coast. She's bringing the talent workbook, putting your talent to work, trying to make creative journaling or journaling part of our district curriculum to help with test anxiety, to help with behavior and classroom management issues, to help with all sorts of socio-emotional issues. And based on not just, hey, this sounds like a great idea, but actual research that was done in the Texas schools, and also she has seen in her own training of other creative journal expressive arts therapists. So again, you are invited to be part of this conversation, 805-781-3875. So to continue on to push ahead, because over the years now you have the Creative Journal for Parents, which is a guide to unlocking your natural parenting wisdom, helping parents to feel more confident in what they're doing. You have the Creative Journal for Children and for Teens. Mm-hmm. And the Teen Journal I used this weekend or on Friday in my workshop and shared that, and it's excellent. So what is the goal in the program now, and what was the success you had in Texas? Because I'm hoping that people that are listening are realizing that all you're having to do is unlock the door to this information, and then it's pushing itself, right? You're not having to sell this idea because the success is so quick,
right?
And so evident.
And the research data we have now is indisputable. In addition to the 1981-82 program, by the way, when we were in the Garvey District, the testing office called the principals of the two schools and accused them basically of cheating. It was
of making up the
results. Oh, yeah, it was stand and deliver story. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because as she said, the test scores were too high. Mm-hmm. And there was an African-American principal in one school who wasn't going to sit still for that. And there was a Hispanic principal in the other school who wasn't going to sit still for that. And so they just really were outraged and said so, and made it very clear that these two schools were the only schools in the district that had creative journaling and had basic skills using arts program, which was the umbrella heading. And so we know that compared to the rest of the district, our scores were very high. So in fast forward to the millennium, in around 2002, we were brought into the Mission District in South Texas. This is the Rio Grande Valley. It's the fastest growing area in the United States. It is the border from Brownsville West from the Gulf of Mexico. 98% Hispanic population in most of these districts. Extreme poverty. I was taken on a tour of the homes of some of the students in Mission, and I thought I was truly in a third world country. People living in shacks made of cardboard and plywood. People living in a trailer with no water. We're talking serious poverty here. And so we have a lot of challenges in these schools. And we have a lot of alcoholism, a lot of domestic abuse. We have a tremendous amount of drug abuse, you name it. So we seem to shine when we get into situations like this. Remember, I cut my teeth on Head Start mm-hmm. in Watts after the riots in 65. So I know that what I do works in these populations because we're giving people a voice. And there's immense creativity and potential in people who have really been tested by life. So we get great results in these districts. And in the Mission District, we started out with three pilot schools. The project coordinator for 21st century grants from the federal government took my training program. And in the middle of the training, she said, I got to bring this into the district. This is too good. We got into three schools. And before we knew it, five more wanted to come in. Principals were looking over the fence and saying, wait a minute, what are they doing over there? How come we don't have that? And so by the end of 2 years, we were in the entire district, K through 12. And the results were phenomenal. Jackie Dyer, who was the superintendent, has written a very beautiful letter about all of the levels of evaluation and education in terms of the Mission District while we were there showed that the creative journal method just was far superior to any other thing that they were doing there.
All right, so let's put a task to the topic. If a parent's listening or an individual's listening and saying, gosh, I want to try this out. Right. I've come to the end of my rope, right? I've tried all the medical model. I've tried all of the behavior trainings. I'm ready to give this journaling a shot. Walk someone through the basics, the getting started. What does that look like?
Well, the first thing to do is to get some materials.
Okay.
The very minimum would be 8.5 by 11 bond paper that's probably lying around the house. Preferably, if you're going to keep a journal, get an 8.5 by 11 blank pages, no lines, and preferably hardback.
And just get that at the...
Yeah, you get that at an art supply store. You can get it, at any of the craft supply stores. And a lot of other stores have them, too. Bookstores sell them.
Okay.
I mean, there are whole walls of these at bookstores now.
But we want no lines.
Right, no lines.
Okay.
And then pencils, colored pencils, crayons, and felt pens. Those are the three art media that I recommend. And the first thing they need to do is simply scribble on the first page so that they get away from that whole anxiety about, oh, I don't have any talent. I'm going to make something ugly. This is going to be a waste of time. You know, I'm not artistic. All right. If you can write, you can draw because you're using the same elements. Curved lines, straight lines, all of the stuff that you use when you write the alphabet, when you learn to write, are the basics of drawing. So you're using line, texture, shape, and color. And the first thing to do is to get over all of that inner self-judgment.
So you just scribble the first page. It's like
scribble.
Getting a dent on the
and
car when you get it.
And I'd say scribble several pages. You know, just get over it.
Right.
Get over yourself about
breaking
not being an artist.
Yes.
Yeah. Breaking it in. Like breaking some shoes in.
Yeah.
Right?
I was thinking that getting that first dent on your new car, right?
Exactly. Just scribble in there. And then start drawing out your feelings.
So now you already made me nervous because what if I don't know my feelings? How can I draw them?
Well, the nice thing is that when you put a crayon, and this is where I come in with my unique method, when you put a crayon or felt pen or pencil in your non-dominant hand, that's the hand you don't normally write with.
So I'd be using my left hand.
Yeah.
Okay.
When you do that, that hand knows how it feels because it's tapping into the right brain, which has access to the limbic system deep inside the brain where our emotions are stored. And the problem with emotions is if they get stored and stuffed, they stay in the body. Emotions can only go three places. They can go inward and stay stuck in the body. Mm-hmm. And we all use these terms all the time. Oh, he gives me a pain in the neck. Oh, that gives me a headache. Mm-hmm. Oh, my back. I'm carrying the world the weight of my shoulders. I mean, we use this all the time. We know it's true. But now we can do something about it. So then what I have people do is scribble the feelings out with your non-dominant hand and then do an outline of the body. It could be a simple Gumby kind of outline and color in the areas where you feel any discomfort.
Okay.
So if you've got a headache, color it in. What color is that headache? You know, is it red? Is it black? Is it brown? What is it? Color it in. And all with the non-dominant hand. And then have a dialogue with that headache. So you're writing the questions with your dominant hand. I'm going to give these questions to your listeners. They can do this on their own.
Okay, so if everyone's ready,
yeah.
Here's what you're going to
do. The first question is, what are you? What body part are you? And then the answer is going to come through the non-dominant hand.
So you actually are writing down with your, say, I'm right-handed. So
yeah.
With my right hand, I'm writing down in my journal.
Yeah.
What
body part are you?
And
or what are you? And it'll answer. I'm your headache. Well, how do you feel? I feel like cement. You know, mm-hmm. It'll say something like that. Well, why do you feel that way? Because you've just been doing too much computer work. I can't stand it. It's so heavy. It's too serious. And I am having a headache over it. Okay.
So now is my left hand coloring these feelings?
No,
or
writing? No, writing. This is like the play script.
Okay.
You and your body, just like a play script.
So it takes a leap of faith to try this the first time, I would
imagine. Oh, yeah, but believe me, I worked with a group of healthcare practitioners at Stanford University at an arts and education conference last weekend.
Okay.
And these are pretty left-brain folks. And they got right into this. They got into the scribbling. They loved it. Their faces changed. They relaxed. And then when they started doing the body parts, you could just see them relaxing. And at the end, many of them came up to me and said, you know, I started feeling this, and now I feel that, you know. It was amazing to see the transformation. And I only had them for a couple of hours, and half of that was me reading body dialogues and success stories from my journal and telling my story. But they got a lot done. So the first question is, what part are you? The second one, how do you feel? Why do you feel that way? In other words, what's causing you to feel this way? And then the fourth question is the beautiful one. What can I do to help you? And believe me, your body will tell you what you can do to help it. It's like a child. You just ask it and it tells you. But the body has never had a voice. Our emotions don't know how to speak unless we find them and let them speak in their own way. Now, one of the languages of the emotions are the arts. Okay, so that's a great way to express it through dance, movement, drama, whatever. All artists know this. But the other thing about it is we need to put those feelings into words so that the left brain gets engaged. Because the right brain is all the emotional, visual, spatial, creative, intuitive stuff. But the left brain has to be engaged too, and that's the language part. So when we put this in words and we get the answer, then we can go do what the body wants us to do. And it might say, you know, just get away from the computer for a while. Will you please take a walk?
My guest today is Lucia Capicchione. My name is Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. And we're talking about creative journaling. How can we develop a practice of journaling? And why wouldn't you want to develop a practice of journaling? Because it is the single most effective way of helping our bodies, emotional systems, lives to heal from trauma, loss, grief, stress, anxiety, depression. Why wouldn't you want to go this route first? 805-781-3875. What is your relationship to journaling? How do you feel about it? Or do you have any feelings about it at all? Are you successful with your journal? And how is that? And would you like to get started with journaling and have some anxiety about where to start? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. So I'm someone who, you know, is nervous about journaling. You've given me this first exercise, and now I'm looking at this big, thick book, and I'm wondering, how will I know if it's working? How often should I do it? You know, what are the nitty-gritties? Because a lot of people aren't going to start unless they have a plan.
Well, one of the things I tell people to do is don't make homework out of it. Don't make schoolwork out of it.
Which is what we do as therapists.
Yeah, exactly. I require that all my clients do journaling. I give them journaling assignments every week, and they have to do that on their own. But I never say you have to do it every day. I just say, I want you to cover this material and do these journal prompts by next week, and then we're going to move on to the next chapter. Because I'm working them through my books. Like Recovery of Your Inner Child is the basic book I use for therapy. Visioning is the book I use for career counseling, or Putting Your Talent to Work, the talent workbook. So I work very in a structured way. I'm more of a tutor, mentor, coach than I am a therapist in that sense. But I tell people, don't make it into homework because then you'll stop doing it. It's like going on a diet and falling off. So to me, I have always embraced my journal as something I go to like going to my best friend to confide with them and what's going on in my life. So whenever I'm upset, even when I have something exciting I want to share, I put it in my journal. You know, it's a way for me to celebrate the good, but it's also a way for me to explore what I'm confused about, or to just dump out what is really yucky, you know, anxiety, fear, frustration, you know, all of that stuff, anger.
Well, and we found also, and we've talked about, that unless we move these emotions through the body in some way, they get stuck. And by giving them voice, either by drawing them, coloring them, writing these feelings or emotions down, you make space for new experiences. And your experience, you know, kind of the death and rebirth, is a very common theme, because I think the last time I had a really long-term experience with my journal was going through this really dark kind of depression transformation from my youngest leaving home to who I was going to be next. Mm-hmm. And this kind of 18-month process of what I kept envisioning, that I was in a tunnel, right, you know, like either a birth canal or something. It was very, very poignant images I kept having. Right. And then because I don't consider myself an artist by training, I was cutting a lot of images out.
Right.
Now, does that also work, or does it have to be the physical?
Well, I recommend collage as well. But I tell people, don't change yourself, because your psyche has some images that it wants to show you. Okay. And it's not going to happen if you just use photographs that somebody else took.
So how do I get into a discipline? Because you and I both know
people... I would caution you about using the word discipline.
Great, I'm glad.
Because the minute I hear that word, that doesn't relate to how I feel about my journal at all.
Is practice better?
I've been keeping it since 1973. I don't even think of it as a practice. It's not like going to a yoga class or doing yoga every day. I don't think of it that way. I think of it as one of my best friends, really. Oh. And so
It's actually a living part of
your life.
Having
a friendship isn't something I'm going to structure and say, I've got to spend a certain amount of time with this friend because that's a good practice. No, I'm going to go from my heart. Is it when do I feel that I really need to sit down with myself? Well, the symptoms are anxiety, frustration, anger, just feeling out of sorts, all of that stuff, sad, grieving, those are all reasons to go to a journal. So to me, it's not about structuring it with your left brain and putting it on the calendar. No, it's about listening to yourself. Mm-hmm. Oh, I really need to go dump this in my journal, or I need to explore this in my journal because I don't really understand it. I want to give you an example of the second research we did because it's very relevant to what we're saying here. We had children in the Edinburgh School District in one school keep journals for one semester. It was supposed to be for the whole year, but because of bureaucratic complications, we didn't get in the classroom until the second semester. This is the largest geographic district in the United States, miles-wise, and it's near the border. Same populations I talked about earlier, primarily Hispanic, lots of poverty, lots of problems. And these children, here's the result from that research. This was through the University of Texas, by the way. This is like hardcore scientific control group study.
Pennebaker's home land.
Yeah, exactly. And I'm a friend of Pennebaker's, and he wrote an endorsement for one of my books. He's been a great supporter and of the new book. So in any event, what happened was, number one, they got 6 academic distinctions based on standardized testing at the end of the year, which they had not gotten before. So that was academically, we delivered to the administration what they all want, what the parents all want. Yeah, academia, that's what they're all crazed about. All right. Well, what about the social, emotional part? Well, the second thing that happened was that there were far fewer behavioral referrals to the principal's office. So as we found in our other school districts, behavioral problems kind of went out the window. Kids were motivated. And remember, they were keeping journals with journal prompts from my book, The Creative Journal. We gave them actual workbooks. And then the third thing was a big surprise, and this is where the health issue comes in, the anxiety stuff. The nurse came out during one of our consultants, because I work with a team, and the consultant was in there visiting, and the nurse came out and grabbed her, and she said, Liz, I need to talk to you. She says, this is standard testing day, and there's nobody in my office. I don't have any children in there throwing up and having diarrhea. And Liz said, what do you mean? What are you talking about? And she said, well, we always have children in the nurse's office on testing day. I have since found that that's a national epidemic, but it's especially fierce in Texas. And I don't have any kids in here. What's going on? Do you think it has anything to do with this journal program you're doing? Because she knew about what we were doing. And Liz said, yes, we do. We think so. We think it does have a lot to do with that because the children are drawing and writing their feelings out before the test for several days. In fact, the whole time, all the journaling is about get your feelings out, but it's also about what are your wishes and dreams and, you know, who's your hero and what do you like and what don't you like and all that kind of stuff.
Things that we love to think about.
Oh, yeah. And so that had a huge impact. And so no sick kids on testing day. And so what I found from that, and of course what the researchers from University of Texas arrived at, was the conclusion that this is not only an academic tool for improving academic standing, but it has great social, emotional impact and physical. So we're hitting it from the intellectual, the emotional, and the physical. And we're integrating it into the curriculum. It's not being brought in as arts as a frill on the side that's always going to get cut out of the budget. This is a language program because their language development was immense. These are bilingual children from bilingual homes. In some cases, no English is spoken at home, in many cases. So they're right, and they can write in Spanish or English if they want in their journals. We don't care. We just want them to get it out on the paper and know that language is personal, it's expressive, and it's meaningful.
We're talking about the power of creative journaling for parents, for children, for teens, for anyone, and the impact it's had across the board for all mental health concerns, with academic concerns. If you want to get in on the conversation, this is kind of your last chance, 805-781-3875. If you want to ask a question of Lucia or talk about your journaling experience or what prevents you from journaling or what you do with your journal, this is your chance. I want to switch it over to our high achiever kids. You know, to the stress and pressures, because I teach at the university, as you know. I would love to see this introduced to, you know, to kids on the other end of the spectrum, the ones that feel entirely motivated but overwhelmed. And how do we introduce that? How do you suggest we introduce that to our high achievers?
Well, I taught at Santa Monica College for several years in the 70s and early 80s. And I had a lot of children, you know, students, who had very pushy parents. And they wanted those kids to achieve at all costs. And so I saw a lot of anxiety there. And I had them all keeping creative journals. Now, I was teaching child development, and they were going to be working with young children in nursery schools and child development centers. And I was teaching art for teachers of young children, and I was also teaching child, family, and community. And so I had them keeping journals, and I noticed a tremendous change in them. They started to relax. And, of course, I did things like I had them giving me their recommendation for what grade I should give them. Mm-hmm. I said, you set your goals. You write me a paper and tell me what your goals are. And then you tell me what grade you think you should get at after the half the semester, and if I agree, I'll give you the grade you asked for. So I had a very relaxed atmosphere in the environment, and it was one of self initiation, and setting your own goals, and really evaluating yourself instead of coming from outside, and they did very well. The classes were very popular.
Hi, Rick. You're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hey there. Hi, Rick.
Oh. Hello.
Hi, Rick. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
Good. What's on your mind?
When you were giving instructions on how to start the journaling, it seemed that you were assuming that everybody was right-handed. And I wondered, how does it work for left-handed people?
Yeah, I don't assume that. I know a lot of other people talking to me about it use right and left and thinking that right is dominant.
That was me.
I never use those terms because I know what you're talking about. It's dominant and non-dominant. My definition of dominant is the hand you normally write with or draw with. And this works with left-handed people just as well as right. I'm the only person on the planet who has worked with the number of people I've worked with or gotten letters from my readers about. So I know for sure, having worked with thousands and thousands and thousands of people, that left-handed people get exactly the same results. A doctor who was head of kinesiology research at UCLA explained it this way. She said, when you went to school, your dominant hand got hardwired to the language centers of your left brain for the purposes of writing and reading. Your non-dominant hand did not. And so it doesn't matter which hand you normally write with. You will get the same results. You'll get into the right brain. What are we talking about when we talk about the right brain? We're talking about visual spatial perception. That's where art comes from. We're talking about emotions. That's where emotional expression comes from. We're talking about intuition. We're talking about creativity, thinking outside the box. That's all right brain stuff. And the non-dominant hand has direct access to that side of the brain.
So, Rick, do you do journaling? Have you tried it?
No, I've never really been into it. I've never been attracted to it. I'm fascinated by what you're talking about. I am an artistic type, though, and I find that my left hand is the most involved in the artistic stuff. So, mm-hmm. I was always really uptight about testing and stuff. So I really identified when you were talking about how kids got sick and stuff.
Are you right-handed?
No, I'm left-handed.
Oh, you're left-handed, right.
Yeah.
Because right-handed people usually draw better with their left hand. They don't realize that, but I've done a lot of research, and I've had people draw with their dominant hand and draw the same subject with their non-dominant, and then I've had everybody in the class vote on which one they liked best, and 98% of the time they liked the non-dominant hand drawing without knowing which hand did which. But 98% liked the non-dominant hand drawing better. They say it has more character, it's more pleasing, the composition is better. Because why? That's all visual spatial perception, and that's what the right brain specializes in. So a lot of people would do well to try drawing with their non-dominant hand. It'll be slow and awkward, and the critic will jump in and say, oh, you can't do this, but it's worth the try.
So if Rick's, I'm sorry, go ahead, Rick.
I'm a musician, and one of the instruments I play is guitar, so I'm working with both hands.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like to intuitively figure out, I play right-handed, so it's, and that's just happenstance because most guitars are for right-handed people.
Mm-hmm.
So I find myself like composing stuff with my left hand intuitively, not even knowing what I'm going to play next.
Right. And that's like this journaling.
I have to play it with my right hand.
Yeah, and that's like this journaling. When you get your hand on the page, if you think about it too much in advance, you're going to blow it. If you just get your hand on the paper and get it moving, your unconscious will start to express. It's just like improvising music. It's like jazz. It will happen. I can guarantee it.
Anything else, Rick?
Works great, yeah.
Thank you for calling in. And will you start journaling, you think? You're going to take this on?
I'd like to try it. I've never tried it, really.
Okay, wonderful. Well, Lucia, then how do people who are interested get a hold of your books?
They can get most of my books at any outlet for books. My new edition of the Creative Journal just came out, 35th anniversary edition. That's a great place to start. If somebody's dealing with a lot of anxiety or grieving, I recommend Recovery of Your Inner Child. That book has been pretty amazing in helping with those issues. The Power of Your Other Hand has chapters on all types of topics, on the body dialogue, on inner wisdom, on relationships with other people, on just emotional expression. There's some drawing exercises in there using both hands. So it's a great book for a lot of different reasons, and I recommend that one too.
So you can just look up Lucia Capaccione, CapaCccione.
Mm-hmm.
And the books will be available. There's a lot to choose from.
They can go to my website, luciac.com, and we sell the books there. And we also sell books that are out of print, so they can get them there.
And so I guess the main thing is to just dive in and have an experience with it, to explore all the different ways that you can be with this journal. I love the idea of reframing it and saying it's like making a new friend, to approach this instead of as a discipline or a homework or I need to explore this as making a new friend and to see where that goes. And the thing I want to leave everyone with today is that one of the things we see most often are the somatic connections to mental health. That when children say to us, I have a stomach ache, I have a headache, I can't go to school, I'm sick, quite often that is how they're expressing to you anxiety or fear or loneliness. And those are great ways to unlock, journaling is a great way to unlock all of those feelings, those emotions, to help children give them a language, because their body is trying to tell you what they're feeling emotionally. So now you can give them a place to express it. Lucia, thank you for being my guest today. Thank you, as always, to listening, for all of you, for listening to this Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. Our shows are available on iTunes, A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist, on our website at kcbx.org. You can reach me at elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com. As always, I appreciate you being part of this conversation. I look forward to conversing with you again next week. I also want to remind everyone that it is Women's History Month, and I love having guests like Lucia on the air who have shared their wisdom for so many years. Thank you for being here. Thank you for supporting Public Radio, KCBX.